Is there anything you want to discuss? Huh? Oh, beautiful, huh? Yeah, very good. Everything, all me. Yeah, Andrew, yes, Sadhu, yeah. Come in. Yeah. come. You're welcome. Yeah. Have a seat, then make yourself comfortable. Your friend meditate before? Oh, good. Never mind. Anyway, I will do. Don't worry. We still got 3 more minutes. If you got any question, you can ask. No problem. While they prepare for puja. Okay, tonight, so who is going to light the candle and the incense? Maybe we get Chingyap and Silun, Silun, Silun just came back. He haven't light before. Okay, Chingyap light. Silun, come. The candle, is it there, right, Pamasri? The lighter? Pass it to Chingyap. The lighter, lighter. Where's the lighter? Don't light the incense, then still don't light the candle. Off the fan, I saw the Pamasri, off the fan. Yeah. Wow, look, there's a low level, the key and wall. Okay. Sadhu. Okay, we all can stand, get ready for puja. Okay, offer the tray first, Sadhu. Never mind, pass it over to you. Sadhu. 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 Put it over there. Sadhu. Near the Buddha image. Sadhu. Sadhu. Okay, there's one more lamp. One more lamp. Wait for the lamp to come back. Sada, sada, sada. 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 Okay, you all can be seated. Eh? Thank you. Can on back the fan. Okay, we will get ready to do the puja. Compose your mind, develop the faith, sadha, virya, then we will pay respect mindfully. Arahang sama sambuddho bhagava buddhang bhagavantang abhivademi. Svakato bhagavata dhammo dhammang namassami. Supatipanno bhagavato savakasangho sanghaṃ namāmi. Okay, now we will start off with our puja chanting. You can be seated and page 4 of the chanting book. For those who are new, I may have to explain a bit. Just now what we did was the pre-puja. Before we start any Buddhist activity, it is very important that we do this devotional offering and cultivation, which we call puja, because it's the starting, we call it pre-puja. So this puja is spiritual devotion, where we cultivate our spiritual faculties of sadha, virya, sati, samadhi, and panya through the various contemplation, rejoicing. We contemplate on all the offering that we make, and is the most significance of all this offering, like our offering of incense, clear water, candlelights, then all the flowers and all the fruits and all the related item. Then we say rejoice, sadhu, 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 means we rejoice in all the generosity of all those kayamita who has prepared and made offering to this puja. Then apart from rejoicing, we also do our chanting, we pay respect to Triple Gem. Then we develop the wholesomeness. Then we recall to mind all the important activity that we have done. As we go through the puja, we develop faith, sadha, through knowing who the Buddha is, and how wonderful his teaching is, and how special a being he is. Then we develop this very strong faith that will drive us to practice and to cultivate it sincerely. That's how the second spiritual faculty of virya come about. Then we pay respect mindfully, we make offering mindfully, we rejoice with all the wholesomeness, with all the generosity, with all the faith and sincerity that each and every kayamita had expressed. So all these are very wholesome. And you do it mindfully, your mindfulness, the third spiritual faculty will arise. Then when you meditate, you stabilize it. Then it will accumulate into samadhi, the fourth spiritual faculty. Then visati and samadhi, when you can carry out this meditative cultivation in your meditation and daily life, you will develop wisdom, which is the last spiritual faculty. You can see things as they are. So this is an understanding of what we do. Then now we will start our puja chanting, so that you will understand all the significance of all this chanting. How we recite the vandana, which is salutation to the Buddha. Then after that we take refuge with the Triple Gem. Then we renew our precept. Then we chant all the puja offering. Then we make aspiration through understanding the significance of all this puja offering. So all this will help you to develop your spiritual faculty, understand the teaching better, so that you can have the causes and conditions to cultivate in a very much easier way. all this can develop a lot of wholesomeness, a lot of merits. Then later on, you can invoke the power of this wholesomeness and merits in the closing puja. You can share them with all beings. Yeah. So all these are designed for you all to benefit from all this puja, pre and post puja, and to develop all the important essential dhamma and good mind state, so that you can cultivate this Buddha Dhamma with ease. The spiritual faculties will allow you to understand spiritual teaching. That's why they are very important. So do not underestimate all this puja offering, puja chanting and recitation. So now you turn to page 4. We shall start the salutation, Vandana. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adina dana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kamesu micchacara viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musavada viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Suramiraya macchapamadatana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Okay, now we will chant the puja, Padipa puja, offering of light. Janna sarapaditena dipena tamatang sena tiloka dipang sambuddhang pujayami tamonodang. Ganda sambara yuthena dopena hang sugang hina pujaye pujani yang tang puja bajana muttamang. Vanna ganda guno petang etang kasuma santatin pujayami monindasa siri pada sarorohe pujemi buddhang kasumena nena punnena matena cha hotu mokhang. Pupang milaya tiyata idang me kayo tata yati vinasabhavang. Adivase tunobante paniyang parikapitang. Anukampang upadaya patigang hatu muttamang. Okay, turn to the last page, page 18. We will chant the puja aspiration. Understanding the significance of offering of light, we shall make the following aspiration. May this offering of light to the Buddha bring forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and to help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness of ignorance therein. significance of offering of water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fire of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense, which ye are offerings to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruits of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition sooner as possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free nibbana, making of overall aspiration. By the power of all these merits, born of this offering, may our spiritual faculties of sadha, virya, sati, samadhi, and panya be further strengthened until they become balas or powers, sharing and transferring merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we will pay respect, Tripa Jam. Compose your mind, huh? Buddhang pucayami. Dhammang pucayami. Sanghang pucayami. Okay, you can be seated. Just relax body and mind.
It's a new couple, Doris and the husband.
Oh, okay. Okay, so there are three new people. Okay, I was told by Prasuyan there are three new people. After that, maybe you can collect the blue book. How to develop this meditation, understanding the meditation as taught by Lord Buddha, and also the seminar paper that I gave at this Bangkok Seminar International Buddhist Conference in the year 2013. These two books, you remember to collect them for the three new ones. Then I will give you some simple instruction to learn how to train your mind to develop the meditation. You may not quite understand if you are new, but if you are not new, you have the ability to understand then well and good. Otherwise, you go back and read through the blue book and you will understand. Then to understand the importance of the Buddha's teaching, the seminar paper is very useful. Okay. For those who know how to meditate, you can start your meditation while we're off the light. Then for those who are new, who need instruction, I will give you some very basic instruction to train the mind. Relax body and mind. Make sure you have a very stable posture. Relax means free your mind. Don't go and worry about anything. Whatever that the thought like come back to remind you, you just tell the thought, not now. Please allow me to have this space to develop the training of the mind to be peaceful, to be quiet, so that this mind can settle down and develop the meditation. whatever the mind want you to do, you tell the mind later after the meditation, I will attend to it. Then you make sure your backbone is straight. Then breathe in, breathe out normally. I will teach you a skillful means to make you peaceful and calm. We call it the mind sweeping method. It can help you develop the deconditioning of your heedless thinking so that your mind can be more quiet and peaceful. So the first training is to train your mind not to think so that it can become quiet and peaceful, so that there is the silence within, which is the deep mindfulness. Then after that, I will combine loving kindness that can bring about inner well-being. The first training is to make your mind peaceful, so it will bring about inner peace, then inner well-being. Then after that, I will teach you another skillful means to stabilize the peacefulness, the calmness within. Okay, now, with body and mind relaxed, silent, you close your eye. Then maintain attention at your forehead. Just feel, don't think, feel. If there is any tension, any tightness or any stress within, you just feel it, relax it, until the mind becomes very quiet, very peaceful, and the whole forehead soothingly relaxed. Then you sweep down from your forehead to your eye muscle. You feel your eye muscle, feel, don't think, feel. Again, relax all the tension and tightness within. Whatever ciliary or eye muscle that is not peaceful, relax them. You can feel whatever tension, tightness or stress within, you just feel it soothingly relax. Then you move on to your facial muscle again, feel. Then sweep it down and relax every part of it. If you find it difficult, then you can combine it with the visualization. You can visualize yourself facing a mirror, radiating a radiant smile to yourself. When you can smile, there is joy. When there is joy, you are relaxed and peaceful naturally. That's why this skillful means can help you to relax. So visualize yourself radiating a radiant smile to yourself facing a mirror. Then with that joy, you will relax all your facial muscles. To be peaceful, you must have joy. When there is joy, you are very happy and you are very relaxed in your mind state. Then you can radiate loving kindness and metta to bring about inner well-being. You can recite following me. May I, this body and mind of mine, you feel your body and mind, be well and happy, well and happy. You must feel the well-being and happiness within your whole body and mind, your entire body, all the cells within your entire body and your mind, your whole being. You can repeat them. May I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy, free from all harm and danger, free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. May to be without enmity, without ill will and untrouble. May it keep itself happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within your hearts. Then you can relate this same metta to your loved ones. May all my loved ones be well and happy, well and happy, free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free from all harm and danger. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untrouble, and may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within the hearts. Feel them. Then you can radiate the same to all beings within the vicinity of Subhangjaya. Sweet Brother Suyan and Mipong's house, may all beings within this vicinity, known and unknown, seen and unseen, including all Kayamitas, be well and happy, well and happy. May their mind states too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free from all harm and danger. May they all too be well, happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then we can extend this metta to all beings. May all beings within the whole of Subhangjaya, Selangor, Malaysia, Southeast Asia, Asia, then Mother Earth, then our whole planet, then the whole of the solar system, our galaxy, our Milky Way, then the whole of this universe, may all beings within the entire existence, may they all to be well and happy, free from all harm and danger, free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. May their mind states to be without enmity, without ill will and untrouble, and may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. By now you should be more calm and more peaceful. Then you just relax body and mind. Then you just feel your facial muscle again. Relax every part of it. Feel it suddenly relax. Then you move your attention down to your neck. Feel relaxed, shoulder, feel relaxed, hand, feel relaxed, back to shoulder. Then you move your attention down to your heart area. This is a very important location within your body. This is where the seat of consciousness is. This is where the heartbeat arises and passes away. This is where the life force arises and passes away. So you just silence everything and feel around the heart area. You can detect any vibration or even your heartbeat. You just relax into it, then silence your mind completely and feel. Just be with the vibration, be with the heartbeat. If you are new, if you are not sensitive, then it's okay. You just feel like you feel your forehead. Then relax every part of your heart area. Then after that, you move down to your stomach. Feel relaxed. Abdomen. Feel relaxed. Then your leg. Feel relaxed. Then your buttock. Feel relaxed. Then you have to reverse the whole of the mind sweeping method from your buttock. You feel relaxed, your leg feel relaxed. Then you come back to your abdomen, feel relaxed, stomach feel relaxed. Then you move on and sweep up to your heart or chest area. Again, you feel and relax into it. Then you move it on to your shoulder, hand back to shoulder, feel relaxed, neck feel relaxed, facial muscle feel relaxed, every part of it, eye muscle feel relaxed, and your forehead feel relaxed. If you find it peaceful, soothing, you can repeat this whole of the mind sweeping method one more time. For those who have already trained, if you feel that is enough, then you can move on to stabilize this peacefulness, this calmness that you have developed. You can use whatever skillful means object of meditation that can allow you to anchor your mind and stabilize this mind, so that this quietness, this peacefulness, this mindfulness can be stabilized. The Buddha recommended anapanasati. Anapanasati is mindfulness of in and out breath. Anapana is the in and out breath. Sati is mindfulness. So if you can train your mind to develop the mindfulness of your in and out breath, your meditation will come about. Your mind will become very quiet, very peaceful, very still and very silent. Fully aware. So this is a very important skillful mean technique. You have other meditation objects, right? The rising and falling of the abdomen, or even dynamic meditation, or any skillful means like chanting, etc., or dynamic movement of your hand, you can use them. If you are using anapanasati, then you listen to the instruction. You feel your breathing, like you feel your forehead, just in front of your nostril, maintain attention and feel. Then like the Buddha's instruction, breathing in, the mind is aware. Breathing out, the mind is aware. Means the awareness of the mind follow the breathing. The moment it detects, the two move as one. So when you can be mindful of the in and out breath without thought, your mind will become very peaceful, very calm, very quiet, very still. And sooner or later, you will experience the byproduct of this meditation. The first very beautiful mind state to arise is piti. Piti is a spiritual calmness, a type of spiritual rapture or joy that will arise when the mind is silent, peaceful, and just aware of the breathing. When the mind is mindful of the breathing without thought, it is very calm, very soothing, very peaceful. Then you relax into all the mind state that arise, continue to silent. Then this piti can become more and more quiet, more and more refine until it becomes sukha. Sukha is a very much more refined state of piti. Then you will experience the blissfulness of sukha within. Then you continue to let things be, meditate and silent. This sukha will transform further and become very quiet, very peaceful. Then you will realize pasati, which is the silent mind, the tranquil, still, quiet mind. So if you continue to relax and stay mindful, this pasati, or this silent mind, tranquil mind, still mind, they will become more and more stable, more and more stable, until finally your mind can realize the higher level of sati, or more refined level of sati. Then the mind is in sati. During that time, wherever you locate this mind, the mind is very quiet, very peaceful, very still, and is very sensitive. This is the meditative mind. This is the silent mind. This is the quiet mind. So you can use this mind to develop the meditation. Then you just silent within. Whatever that arises within the 5 gate of form and mind, you will come to understand very clearly. You will come to witness all of the essential Dhamma. Okay, I'll allow you to train your mind this way. Then I will ring the bell after about 10 to 15 minutes. just still want to continue with the meditation, you can continue. For those who are now, slowly, quietly, and mindfully, come out of meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, inner mindfulness that you have developed. These are the mind state that you need for your meditation. Okay, now we will continue with our invocation to the devas, then the basics. I will read you the English translation. In this universe in their entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good doctrine of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release, Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. This is the time to listen to the doctrine.
Samanta Chakvalisu Atra Gacchantu Devata Saddhammang Muni Rajasa Sunantu Sagga Mokkhadam Dhamma Savana Kalo Ayam Badanta Dhamma Savana Kalo Ayam Badanta Dhamma Savana Kalo Ayam Badanta Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa
Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Iti Veso Bhagava Arahang Samma Sambuddho Vijacharana Sampanno Sugato Lokavido Anuttaro Punya Ramasarati Satta Deva Manusanang Buddho Bhagavati Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ehi Paseko Opanaiko Pachatang Veditato Inohiti Supatipano Bhagavato Savakasango Ujupatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Nyayapatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Samichipatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Yadidang Chattari Purisa Yukkani Atta Purisa Pugala Sa Bhagavato Savakasango Ahuneyo Ahuneyo Kineyo Anjali Karaniyo Anuttarang punyakitang lokasati Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we pay respect to Bhajam. Bhutang Pujami. Dhammang Pujami. Sanghang Pujami. Okay, you can relax body and mind, then you can be seated. Okay. Now we will open up for meditation reporting session 2, followed by any question and answer. If you got any question, you can ask regarding your meditation, the teaching, or anything you want to know about the teaching and the meditation and how you can use it to help you understand life, to overcome all of your life situation and problem that you encounter in life. Okay, now we open it up. If you got any question or you want to report your meditation, you just put up your hand. We will pass you the mic. Yeah. What about your friend? The one that just came with the spec. You want to report your meditation? Pass the mic to him. Don't worry, you just describe exactly how you do it. Then you got the chance to ask any question you like. Or you just describe how you find the meditation.
Okay, so hi everyone. Yes. This is actually not my first time.
Oh, good.
actually, I've attended the meditation retreat in Aloka under
very good.
That was back in, I think, 7 years ago.
Oh, you went to Asahan? You went to Asahan? Malacca?
Malacca, yeah.
Oh, you went there. Yeah. Good. How you find the retreat?
Oh, it was very good experience.
Very
peaceful.
Oh, sadhu.
But ever since after I left the retreat, and then I've never found that kind of peace again until I come back here again.
Oh, tonight you found that peace. Oh, sadhu to you. Here is quite a unique place. Many people, the moment they step in here, they know. Especially new people, you are sensitive to meditation, you have your past. You will experience the peace, the silence. Then you can meditate easily. So you want to describe your experience?
Because he told me today, so I wore jeans today, so it was a bit uncomfortable.
But were you able to sit?
I was able to sit, but so I managed to bear with the pain.
Oh, very good.
But it came and went.
Very good.
Just let it be. And then there are thoughts who came and go.
Oh, very good. Then what else? What do you do after that?
I try to bring back my mind to the breathing
as
soon as I became aware that
it has wandered off. Very good. So does it stabilize after that?
And during the meditation, because I've been learning Dharma, and then some of the verses of the sutra came in again. Came in, popped up in my mind again. And then it just went, and then and started to realize there are many things when we try to search for the answer, we roughly know what it is, but then when you just say it out, you know it's not that.
Yeah, it's not that thing.
It's not that thing.
Because that thing is not a word.
Yeah, it's not a word.
Not but a you, concept, not yeah. an idea.
Yes.
It is beyond word. So that thing need to be realized. When you realize it, the mind just understand, that's it. Very good. Then later on, you say you managed to settle down. The peace, the awareness of the breathing managed to settle down. Then how you feel?
Calm and peaceful.
Ah, very good. Sadhu. Does that last very long?
Eventually pain again, but then...
Okay. When you have the pain, what do you do? What do you do?
Bear with it.
Ah, good. Bear means you endure it. But you have to silence your mind to find out what actually happened. The key to meditation is to relax body and mind. If you know how to relax, the pain will disappear. The pain will fade away. It will cease to be. Pain arises because of certain reason. Like you say, you wear jeans. You don't have a proper loose pant where you can really cross your leg and relax. Jeans are normally more tight, so you find it more difficult to meditate. That's why you use the word more uncomfortable to you. But if you have been through the retreat, you will know where you have very loose clothing, that are more conducive for meditation, you can cross your leg easily and you can meditate and relax easily. When pain arises, you need to understand what is going on. At least for your case, you are not too bad. You endure, means you understand this is the reality of this body. When I don't know how to relax, when my sati is not stable, then this mental hindrance will arise. Pain, that sensation, is a negative feeling which you don't like. Understand? That's why you call it pain. You label it as painful feeling. But the actual thing has got no word. That's why I say when you're silent, you feel. The awareness of it is different. And then you will understand why it developed and become that type of feeling which you label as pain or unpleasant feeling. But if you are just aware, then for your case, luckily you endure, means you didn't react to it. You can endure it. You bear with it without aversion. And then off and on it disappears. Then it comes back because you don't know how to relax. You don't know how to maintain sati. You have not trained your mind or cultivate this anapanasati for a long time already. That's why you are not able to experience all those mental peace or mental silence. So next time when you meditate, always remember you need to train this mind. Otherwise this thinking, heedlessness, they will come back to haunt you. Like you experienced initially, thought arise when pain arise. Before pain arise, there's no thought or little thought. The reason why thought arise, pain arises, because you have mental hindrance. So you look at the whiteboard. These are the two categories of mind state that the Buddha talked about. The reason why living beings are not able to have the meditative mind is because of this mental hindrance. That's why they are called mental hindrance, pancha nivaranas. Hindrance means it hinders your mind from becoming peaceful, from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner awareness. Understand? And what are they? They are sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness of mind, and doubt. And these five, throughout the day, living being has a lot. So the Buddha says it's because of this mental hindrance. You are not peaceful, you cannot meditate, you are not mindful, you are not heedful, you are not aware, because you lack the opposite five, the spiritual faculties. When you have these five, these are special faculties of mind, or special mind state, that are conducive for spiritual understanding. That's why it's called spiritual faculty. They will enable you to understand spiritual teaching easily. But meditators' problem, they don't understand this. So what they do? They go and meditate. They want to force their mind to become peaceful. So at least for your case, when pain arises, you know how to endure it. You bear it. Not so bad. When you bear it, endure it, this mental hindrance doesn't arise. You will. What happens if you label it as pain? You have aversion towards that sensation or that feeling in meditation. Then what happens? It becomes a mental hindrance there. Correct? Because you label it as pain, something you don't like, negative craving. So ill will. So when there is ill will, it will prevent or hinder your mind from becoming peaceful. That's why you cannot meditate. Your mind becomes agitated, disturbed. And ill will is one of the three evil roots. So because of that, this mind becomes restless. Because it is not peaceful, because it doesn't want that feeling, it wants to push away. So that craving and desire to push away that feeling is a hindrance. That's why you cannot become peaceful. So what you did was right. When you are able to endure, bear with it, accept the reality of the form, but you fail to understand when you are not relaxed, the pain will develop because the chi cannot flow when you cross your leg. Then you hold it in a position which is not relaxed, the tactile consciousness, they will build up. And at the bend, at the location where you are not relaxed, where your leg press against it, then it will develop numbness and pain later. That's how it arises. So when you understand, you relax. That's why the four support to meditation is very important. First is to relax into every mind state that arises. When you relax, the pain becomes bearable because you don't labor. When you don't labor, you allow your mind to be, the mind does not react, does not stir. Then it settles down back into sati, mindfulness. That's how it becomes a spiritual faculty. And then this mindfulness will make you peaceful, make you calm. Then you will experience pity. Then pity is a very conducive mind state. It's an enlightenment factor. It will make you relax, peaceful, and experience the spiritual joy and calmness. And that mind state overcome whatever sensation that you feel earlier. That's why it goes away. But after that, when you cannot maintain that silence or mindfulness, it will come back again. So whenever spiritual faculty is not there, the hindrance will manifest. So according to the Buddha, it's very simple, is it? When we want to train our mind, we have to train our mind to develop the spiritual faculty. Don't go and fight the hindrance. Don't go and suppress, control, and do anything with it. That's why don't label it. That's why you come to know when you try to understand something. The moment you think you are about to understand, then the word come out or the labeling come out, then you realize it's not the thing that you are looking for. So that is concept, knowledge, words, not the reality. The reality is when you are silent, the silent mind experience it, understand it, awaken to it. So this understanding is very important. So the Buddha said you have to cultivate five spiritual faculty, then automatically the hindrance will be gone. That's why we did our puja. We recite the chanting, we recall to mind the nine great virtues of Lord Buddha. Then we understand how special he is. He is the wisest and the most virtuous living being ever to be born. And his teaching is so profound, so beautiful. It can lead to enlightenment in the here and the now. Your mind can liberate and develop the wisdom to be free from any affliction or suffering. And because of that, your faith becomes very strong, unshakable. Then it will drive you to cultivate this teaching. That's how the second spiritual faculty, virya, come about. When you have virya, you are no longer sleepy, slow and topa, no more. Then when you have faith, your mind is very calm, very composed, you are very confident, you got no more doubt. Then the moment this virya arrives, it will drive you to cultivate, to develop the meditation, the mindfulness, the silence. That's why once this one arises, the mind is without thought, quiet, peaceful. You will experience the piti, the sukha, the pasati, and the various beautiful mind state. The stillness, the tranquility, the silence within, which you have not experienced since the 7 year ago retreat. Yeah. So this is possible anytime, anywhere, any moment, any place. It can arise throughout the day if you have developed the cultivation. It can become a part of your nature. So sati is very important. Without sati, there is no meditation, because this is the first factor of enlightenment. Without sati, you cannot investigate the Dhamma. Without sati, you cannot cultivate the meditation. You cannot develop the four foundations of mindfulness. You cannot cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. You cannot be aware of your mental intention behind your action, speech, and thought process. And because of that, you cannot even keep your precepts, because you are not aware, you are not mindful to see all this. So sati, when it arises, the mind becomes quiet, peaceful. That's why there is no fear, no worry, no anxiety, no sorrow, no lamentation. It's peace. That's why it is not restless. Are this hindrance? No more. Otherwise, most people have this hindrance. The mind becomes restless when there is fear, there is worry, there is anxiety, there is sorrow, lamentation, and insecurity or unfinished business or problem that you hold on to, you worry about. So because of that, the mind lacks peace. It becomes restless because you worry so much, you have so much anxiety, it's not peaceful, you cannot settle down. So to have peace, you must have sati. Then you must train it, stabilize it, anchor it to an object of meditation so that it does not wander off and become heedless, like what happened to you just now. But the moment it becomes like that, you are aware. That's why your past training, your meditation help you. Then some of the Dhamma, it arises again because you have heard them before. You have studied them before. And these are like prompt you, like yoniso manasikara, wisdom that can arise. That's why when you have understood it clearly, stabilized, this Dhamma, this wisdom, understanding of the Dhamma, they will arise by itself. Then they will teach you what to do. They will teach your mind what to do. They will make you like full of spiritual faculty, no more fear. You will not be deluded by what you see, what you hear, and what you think. Your mind no longer stir and react like before, because you understand them, you have trained them, you have developed the meditation. So sati, when you stabilize it through anapanasati or any object of meditation, it becomes very stable, it becomes samadhi. Samadhi is not concentration. It's the collected mind, unwavering mind. When the mind is collected and unwavering in its natural state, not in the state of concentration or focusing or one-pointedness or absorption, no. When samadhi is there, in the midst of life, when you see something, hear something, smell, taste, tactile, feel or think, your mind that has samadhi is collected and unwavering. That's why it does not stir. It does not react to what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. It's always in the state of equanimity. That's why it is at peace. When it is not wavering, collected, and doesn't stir, it is in the state of equanimity. And this mind that is in equanimity is peaceful. That's why there is no sensual desire and ill will. Otherwise, your like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience upon moment of contact of mind with any of your senses will cause you to have that habitual tendency to react. That's why duality arises. Your pleasant and unpleasant sense experience will arise. So all this will lead to the hindrance of mind. Then the last one is, of course, when you have sati and samadhi, your mind has clarity. And because it's unwavering and collected, it can see things as they are. The mind does not stir. And the conditioning all cannot come in and disturb you. That's why you see things as they are. Not with the mental conditioning. Not with your views and opinion and judgment and all those things. The mind that has sati and samadhi is silent, collected, unwavering and still. That's why it sees things as they are. And you will understand clearly. That's how wisdom can arise. Panya can arise, the last spiritual faculty. When there is wisdom, all the five hindrances cease to be, because you know them for what they are. And they cannot disturb you anymore. And that's how you can develop the meditation. And you will progress very, very fast in the meditation once you understand this. Okay? Sadhu. I rejoice. Thank you for the sharing, for the question. Anybody else who would like to report their meditation? Or ask any question? Nobody. As usual, so quiet. Okay, if you don't have, then maybe I read to you this part. Yeah, this book is a very good book. It was based on one of the talks that I gave in Klang. In the year 2014, October the 3rd, at Thiratana Buddhist Society, Klang. The title of the book is Emptiness, where that was a topic I spoke that night. And this is the transcript of the Dhamma talk delivered by me on the 3rd October 2014 at Thiratana Buddhist Society, Klang, Selangor. For those who have the book, you can turn to page 10. Page 10. Because the topic that I spoke on is emptiness, so I will read the paragraph before page 10. So what appears to you as empty is relative. To you it is an empty container or an empty pot. But to the scientist there is something inside. So emptiness, or that word empty, has been used to convey a certain meaning that you cannot take for granted. If you take it literally, you will argue and comment as to what sort of teaching that is. The Heart Sutta's its form does not differ from emptiness, and emptiness does not differ from form. For form itself is emptiness, and emptiness itself is form. If you use your logical mind or rational mind, you surely cannot come to an agreement with this statement. Then you will doubt and question. You will say, this cannot be. What sort of teaching is this? Everything is so solid and so real, yet you say it's empty and not real. Then why do we want to live life if everything is empty and not real? What reason is there for living being to continue to live life? For example, if you think your money is also not real and empty, then give it to me. I will use it. It does not mean that there is no money. That money is empty. The meaning is very deep. It all depends on your understanding and your seeing. If you cannot develop the right understanding to see clearly, then this word has got no meaning to you. But when you have developed the wisdom and the understanding, you will have the wisdom light to illuminate clearly and insight into reality. Then you will come to realize that what the Buddha has taught in both the Theravada and Mahayana tradition are in fact exactly the same. They asked me to speak on this topic was because they told me only Mahayana teach emptiness. Theravada don't teach emptiness. Theravada teach what? Yeah. What did Theravada teach? Huh? Yeah, maybe we ask Angasya. You seldom hear of emptiness in Theravada teaching. Right? You only heard of what? Sunyata is a Pali word in Theravada, but seldom taught. Understand? And yet they tell me emptiness is a Mahayana teaching. They cannot understand Heart Sutta. They say, where got such thing? Form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. Form is form. I say, how can form be empty? So people cannot understand. But actually, the Mahayana teaching is very profound. That's why without a clear meditative insight or understanding, you cannot understand Heart Sutta. Heart Sutta, I can tell you, a lot of even cultivator and certain monks, they don't believe Heart Sutta. They say, no such teaching. Because they cannot comprehend. Completely cannot comprehend. What they have learned is only anatta, they say. Non-self. They thought anatta is only non-self. He said the Buddha never talked about empty. He said they only heard it from the Mahayana teaching. So they want me to explain this whole thing. That's why they choose this title, emptiness. So I had to explain. Emptiness is just a word. If you have not developed the wisdom and the ability to understand, the word has got no meaning to you. But the moment you understand, you have this joy within. Then you develop that clear, deep understanding. Then that wisdom will actually awaken you. And you have so much gratitude towards the Buddha for teaching you that type of teaching. And like I explained, both Theravada and Mahayana, no difference, same teaching. Except people don't understand. Actually, anatta is not only non-self. Anatta includes empty nature, not a permanent, unchanging entity. That's why the whole of the phenomenal world is not what you think. They are impermanent. That's why it's not so real. They come and they go, condition arising, causal phenomenon. So this teaching is very important because if you read the Sutta, the Buddha said it very clearly. He said the five aggregate of form and mind, they exhibit the three characteristics of nature. They are impermanent. If you grasp and cling, you lead to suffering. Then they are also anatta. Then you say anatta is non-self. Then when the Buddha say rupang anicchang, rupang anatta, what does it mean? Rupang is form, isn't it? This chair, this table is also form, isn't it? So when the Buddha say rupang anatta, means the chair is non-self. Where got such thing? The chair is not a permanent unchanging entity. That's why it's anatta. The table is not a permanent unchanging entity. That's why it's anatta. Because it's condition arising. That's why it's impermanent. That's why it's empty. Not so real. Not what you think. When the condition is there, it arises, it exists. When condition ceases to be, it ceases to be. That's why it's not real. It comes and it goes. It's not a permanent unchanging entity where you can hold on to, cling on to and say, this is me, this is I. Eternal nature. Never die. No such thing, the Buddha said. Yeah. So because of that, I will have to explain the four ultimates of Dhamma that the Buddha teach, that you understand. So the next paragraph. According to the Buddha, the whole of the universe is just a phenomenal world of consciousness, and each and every phenomenon, not only our five aggregate of form and mind, the first aspect as a human being, and the second aspect as the five mental aggregates, they are all impermanent, leading to suffering and empty. just like what I shared with you all at my last Dhamma talk, I mentioned there, because it was at the Tiratana Center. Can you all remember, under Abhidhamma, there are four types of ultimate Dhammas or Paramita Dhammas. What are they? The first ultimate Dhamma is Rupang, or Rupa, form. Form is the first ultimate. Then the second ultimate is Chitta, mind, or consciousness. Then the third one is Chetasika. Chetasika are the content of consciousness. And according to Abhidhamma, there are 52 mind states, or Chetasikas. All these three are within the conditioned world. These three are actually your five mental aggregates of form and mind. Rupa is form, Chitta is mind, Chetasika is the content of consciousness. The Buddha said there are the three ultimates of the universe within the conditioned world, because from this form and mind, everything arises. Nothing is apart from this form and mind. That is why the Buddha said, if you understand that this five aggregate of form and mind, which is what you are, which are your nama and rupa, or chitta and its content, they are all mind-make. And mind is the forerunner of all things, then you will not be deluded by them. Chitta without its content is vijnanam, or pure consciousness. You will then come to understand that the world is only a phenomenal world of consciousness, and they all, the five aggregate of form and mind, exhibit the same universal characteristics of impermanence, leading to suffering when you deludedly grasp and cling onto it. They are all conditioned arising, causal phenomena, not a permanent unchanging entity that you can cling onto, hold onto, and grasp onto, and say, this is me, this is I, therefore all this can be mine. Hence, it's anatta, or non-self. It's non-self nature. That is why it is non-self, because it is impermanent, leading to suffering when you want things your way, which is not nature's way. Because ultimately, it's all empty, just a phenomenal world of consciousness, coming and going, arising and passing away. Then the fourth ultimate is Nibbana, which belongs to the unconditioned, the supramundane aspect. That is the last ultimate. Then from there, we go on. The next subtitle is Anatta and Self-Delusion. Anatta has two meanings. Non-self is only a very small aspect of anatta. That's why the Buddha, when he taught the sutta, asked the monk to chant Rupang Anicchang, then Rupang Anatta. What is the meaning? Form is impermanent. Then what is anatta? If you say non-self, what does that mean? Well, form also is non-self. Then how about this table? Is it also non-self? How can it be? Because this table is just element, it doesn't have life. Then why do you want to identify it with self and non-self? Self and non-self is when it is as a human being, the first aspect of the five aggregate of form and mind. If you deludedly cling on to this form and mind as self, then you have self-delusion or sakayadhiti, because this one is not you. There is no atta there. Then I ask, can you all understand? No answer. So I ask, no answer means what? You all cannot understand. Maybe this is too profound. Never mind. Eventually, you will understand. That's what I told them. I say, when you do not meditate, and when you do not have the silent mind to see clearly, you will tend to believe that this human being is you. You will ask, how can you say it's not me? I have been using it for the last so many years. I can feel. When I want to jump, I can. When I want to laugh, I also can. That is because you all have already experienced life, and this form and mind has been following you for so long. When you are born, you are given a name. You are so conditioned by the name because you use that name to identify yourself all the time. Is that not the case? Every time you act with this form of mind, you say, I see, I think, I hear, I feel, and therefore I am. It is like you are real and you really exist. But if you meditate and contemplate, you will come to a different understanding. You will get a shock of your life when you come to realize that this so-called human being was never you. He is only a bundle of memories with his conditioning following nature's law, going the way of nature. If I have time, I will explain this further. Those who have been attending my class, they will understand because it is very simple. But I do not have the luxury of time today because the condition is such. We started late and we have to cover many other aspects of the teaching. You want to understand that one, you go and read the Heart Sutta note. It's all there. Then in many of the talks, the Green Book also have. Who are you? What are you? Then this very important sutta, Ani Sutta. I will now share with you this Ani Sutta. During the Buddha's time, the Buddha spoke this sutta. I only came to know about this sutta a week ago, means at that time when I gave the talk. When I noticed a Facebook posting by Brother Yu Ban, a Dharma friend from Bob's, I thought it was interesting. How is it that there is such a sutta which I have never come across previously? I thought to myself that it was indeed coincidental and timely because the following week I will be delivering this talk on emptiness. Then last week Brother Tay had mentioned he is afraid when you all see the title of the talk, you may not turn up for the talk. Because it is as if everything is empty. And thus, what's the point of listening to the talk? In order to generate faith, this sutta seems to have suddenly surfaced just at the right time for this talk. I printed it out from the internet. It should help you a lot. In this sutta, the Buddha said that during the Dharma ending age, the Dhamma will disappear when people do not believe the true words of the Buddha, especially so when this topic on emptiness or sunyata has been taught as the profound deep teaching. I will read from the sutta so that you can understand better. Ani Sutta, staying at Sarvati, the Buddha told the monk, there once was a time, the Dasarahas, they had a large drum called the summoner. Every time when they want to summon or call his people to meet to discuss the matter, they will use this drum. They call it the summoner. When summoner was split, do you know what they would do? The Dasarahas would insert another bag into the drum, and eventually over time the summoner's original wooden body disappeared. And only a conglomerate of packs remain. Why? That is because so many packs have been inserted. So too it is with the disagreement among themselves. When there are too many disagreements, like what is happening nowadays, just like the samana, the Theravada tradition itself is also divided into so many fractions, such as by method, technique, teacher, interpretation, commentaries, etc. During the Buddha's time, there is only one teacher and one teaching. Now it is not so, because later on Mahayana, then Vajrayana, and Bodhist tradition also divide into so many more fractions. Now you understand how the many packs went in until the drama was no more. The Buddha said, in the same way, in the course of time, in the future, there will be monks who will not listen when the discourse, which are words of the Tathagata, very deep in its meaning, transcendental. The word transcendental means transcending the thinking mind, the mundane mind, the rational mind, the conditioned arising mind. Connected with emptiness or sunyata are being recited. They will not lend their ears. They will not set their hearts on knowing them. they will not regard this teaching as worth grasping or mastering. But when they listen to discourse that are literary works, the work of famous poet, elegant in sound and elegant in rhetoric, the word of outsider, the words of so-called disciples that are recited, they will lend their ears and set their hearts on knowing them. They will regard the teaching as worthy, worth grasping and mastering. In this way, the disappearance of the discourses, which are words of the Tathagata, very deep in their meaning, transcendental, connected with sunyata or emptiness, will come to be. Then I say, isn't this pitiful? Just because you do not have an open mind, all this misunderstanding can arise. Why can't you have an open mind and listen? If you cannot understand, then just let things be. But when the time comes, when you can understand, you will appreciate the deep, profound meaning. You should have an open mind and investigate into everything. If that teaching can transform living being and brings about great benefits and transformation in you, and what you are doing has actually made you stagnate and remain the same, then why must you doubt? Why can't you just give yourself a chance? It is not to say you give others a chance. It is to you, yourself, because your own karma, your karmic nature depends on this understanding. If it happens to be the truth, then what happened? You will miss it. Do understand that you have nothing to lose by having an open mind to investigate into it. If you cannot understand this, then very difficult to make you understand the Dhamma, because the actual Dhamma is a lot more profound. Now I will zero in on the true understanding of emptiness. We just talk about emptiness. So empty of what? That is a relative statement. If you are a scientist, you will say the environment is not empty because there are air within the atmosphere. This can lead us into unnecessary argument and debate. But when it comes to the true teaching, emptiness is an understanding. There is nothing for you to debate about, as life is like that. Let us take the human being as an example, as a good example. Brother Gan said, Theravadin always talk about the five aggregates of form and mind. The Buddha also always referred to them as impermanent, bringing about suffering. Ultimately, they are non-self and empty. But the empty nature of existence is what the Buddha meant under his Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. Anatta Lakkhana Sutta is a sutta on anatta. And then you will understand what is the meaning of anatta. That is why he taught Rupang Anicchang, Rupang Anatta. It is impermanent because it is conditioned arising a causal phenomenon. That is why it is not real. Because whatever that is conditioned arising is never stable. It will transform according to the supporting condition. When the supporting condition ceases to be, the phenomenon will also cease to be. Then what do you say? You will say that fire aggregate of form and mind or the human being died. But when it is a sound, you do not say it died. When I stop speaking, there is no more condition for your hearing consciousness to arise, and you never say that sound died. But instead you say the sound disappear. When a human being's heartbeat stops, you say he has died because there is a sakkayatiti, self-delusion. And because you think there is a person who has died, actually only the supporting condition ceases to be, just like sound. There is no difference. So when you come to understand that, you will have an entirely different understanding altogether with regards to this fire aggregate of form and mind, which is the living being. Then we come to Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. Firstly, you must investigate into what the Buddha said in the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. How many of you have heard of this Anatta Lakkhana Sutta on anatta or emptiness? Oh, very good, we have a few. The Anatta Lakkhana Sutta is very clear. The Buddha referred to form, the human form. You look at it, can you say this is me? This is self. Because you believe this is you, you will ask, why not? What happened then? The Buddha said, if you believe this is you, you will have a lot of problem. Because the First Noble Truth very clearly points towards that. The First Noble Truth final summary said that, in short, it is your self-delusion or sakkayadity that condition you to grasp and cling onto this fine aggregate of form and mind, the upadana khandhas that I call dukkha. So you think this is you. You will worry about this physical body or form getting old, getting sick and dying. Hence the suffering. I will now read from the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. The Buddha said very clearly, he said, this body is not mine. This body is not self. He said that to the five ascetic. Do you know why? After the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, or the first sermon, he expounded this sutta. And then all the five ascetic became arahant. That's why this Anatta Lakkhana Sutta is very penetrative. So please do listen attentively. And maybe some of you may become arahants too. Really, it's possible. Not difficult. Now you listen. Maybe tonight we have a few. The Buddha said, form is not self. This physical body is not self. External form too is not self. Means all this external mental form, understand? Whatever you can come to perceive through your senses, like the table, the chair, the fan, my voice, the building, or whatever. Then I ask the question, would you agree? If it is really you, a permanent, unchanging entity, how can it be otherwise? You will then have complete control over what you want to do with this form, as it belongs to you, and it is self, which is the you. You can then say what you want, such as, may my body not get old, not get sick and die. But you have gone through life, haven't you? When that physical form wants to get sick, it never asks you for permission. Straight away it gives you a problem, and then you worry about it and panic. You quickly rush to the doctor, who may give you some bad news. Then your face becomes puchat, pale. So what is going on? It is mainly due to your self-delusion, sakkayadity, your attachment, that condition you to have that type of fear. So the Buddha said, for if form was the self, this form will not lead to suffering. And it will be possible to obtain from this form the fulfillment of one's wish that it should be thus and not otherwise. But just because this form is non-self, not a permanent unchanging entity, therefore it leads to suffering. And it is not possible and not within your power to obtain from this form that it should be thus and not otherwise. Can you accept this statement of the Buddha? You have gone through life, isn't it? Does it sound reasonable to you? If it's you, means you can ask this body to do what it wants, isn't it? Because you say it belongs to you, isn't it? You should have complete control over it, isn't it? Don't get old, don't get sick and die. Then it should be thus and not otherwise. But this body, choi le dong ong, understand? He will not listen to you. Here it goes according to nature's law. It goes the way of nature. That's why it's never you. Understand not? When the conditions are there, it appears that this one is you. Like that day I explained to Brother Sia at my house, where they all stay back very late. You know why this body not you? You always say, I want to jump, I jump. I want to run, I run. I want to cry, I cry. I want to laugh, I laugh. Why you say not me? I want to commit suicide, I also can. Why you say not me? Logical or not? Logical or not? Definitely you say yes, isn't it? But then the Buddha, very wise, he said, are you sure this is you? Ability to control doesn't mean it's you, understand? So what you should reflect and contemplate on is, I came up with this understanding beyond when I reflect and contemplate on the car and the driver, that I realized basically our form and mind is like that. The mind is like the driver that drives this physical body around there. So when it's the car and the driver, you see very clearly that the car is the car there, the driver is the driver there. So if that car is in a perfect condition, functioning the way it is, then you can control the car there. You want to accelerate, you want to drive fast, it will go there. You want to brake, slow it down, turn around, and do all those fanciful moves that is allowable, you can in there. So, like this body, you want to run, you can run, you want to jump, you can, but you ask it to levitate, unless you got psychic, it cannot. So, it's also within its capability. So, what happened is, ability to control doesn't mean it's you, because you know the car is a car, the driver is the driver. But when it is your form and mind, when the consciousness is trapped inside, you cannot see the two different entities. You think you are one entity. You think the body belongs to you. You think you have a mind that thinks. So that's why there is self-delusion. Then what happens is, like the car and the driver, if let's say the car got no more fuel, or some very critical part, like piston, out of order, then what happens? Formula One driver also cannot drive the car. So just likewise, when a person is paralyzed from the waist down, you ask the floor, and now you stand, cannot stand. Now you walk, cannot walk. Means what? It doesn't belong to you. It's condition arising, causal phenomenon. When the condition is there for it to function, then like you can control, like it belongs to you. But when there is no more condition, it ceases to be. And then you realize, hey, just like the car and the driver, these two are different. That's why it doesn't belong to you. Then we read on, you will understand. So the Buddha said, for if form were the self, the form would not lead to suffering, and it would be possible to obtain from this form the fulfillment of one's wish, that it should be thus and not otherwise. So if this form is you, you can tell this form what to do. Hey, I control you. You are under my command. This is me, and therefore I can do what I want. But form goes the way of nature. What does it mean? It means it follows nature's law. Even God also has to abide by nature's law. Even God also cannot prevent 9-1-1 from happening. During one of the interviews by Larry King after 9-1-1, he commented, it appears to me now there are two gods, the Islamic or Muslim God and the Christian God. This round the Islamic God won, because the Christian God, even though almighty, cannot predict or stop 9-1-1 from happening. That will give you some understanding that God are also subject to nature's law. They have no power over nature's law. Everything follows nature's law. So the real God is nature's law. When people say God decide, it means nature's law decide. In this case, it means law of karma decide. So by deduction, the law of karma is also God. If you want to know what the true God or the Almighty is, then we must inquire into nature and nature's law that governs all of life and existence. Nature's law are almighty because we are all subject to nature's law. From nature you come, to nature you shall return. That is from emptiness or the source you come. And everything returns to emptiness or the source, as they are all condition arising, causal phenomenal. When condition cease to be, everything returns to the void. That's why it is empty. It's just like the Mandarin saying. Those who know Mandarin will understand. Lai ye kong, qi ye kong. Na mo si zu he bi ku ku hui kong liu lei na. How many of you don't understand Mandarin? A few. The meaning is, when you are born into this world, when you come into this world, you came empty-handed, correct or not? Lai ye kong. Then when you die, depart from this world, did you bring along anything? Qi ye kong. then why do you so foolishly grieve in between? Because of emptiness. Namo si zu he bi ku ku wei kong liu lei. Why do you grieve and shed your tears in between birth and death over emptiness? You come also empty, go also empty. In between, everything is not what you think. As real it can be, it's only within the moment. Split second is dead and gone, and you cannot see. You think everything so real, you want to own, you want to possess. That's why you become possessive. You have selfishness. You have craving to be. And you want everything. At the end of the day, you cannot take along anything. You cannot bring along anything. You can't even own your own physical body. How can you own other people's body? That is delusion. That's why the meaning is, when you are born into this world, you came with nothing. That is when you come empty-handed and naked. Then when you go, you are also naked. But they dress you up. You also cannot take anything along. So why do you grieve over emptiness in between? They will cremate you if you are lucky. If not, they will bury you. And you will rot. But because you have no more consciousness, you will not know what happened. Even when the termites or bug eat you, you will also not know. So is that you? At that time of asking, you will say, it cannot be me. However, before you die, you fear death, fear of this and that, and everything is like so real. And you believe this is what you are. So this reality will show you clearly, if you come empty-handed with nothing, you will also return to nature empty-handed with nothing. Why then in between, in the midst of life, you fight, become so miserable and grieve over emptiness? This is another meaning of emptiness. Another. The Buddha continued, feeling is the same. For if feeling itself, it will not lead to suffering. It will not lead to painful feeling, unhappy feeling, unpleasant feeling. It will be within our power to obtain from feeling the fulfillments of one's wish, that it should be thus and not otherwise. But just because feeling is not self, it leads to suffering. It's not within our power to obtain from feeling the fulfillment of our wish, that it should be thus and not otherwise. The Buddha similarly repeated the same for all the other aggregates of perception, sankhara, and consciousness. After that, the Buddha said, what do you think, Bhikkhu? And now I ask you, the Buddha asked the Bhikkhu that time, is the physical body permanent or impermanent? Impermanent. The monk also said the same. You can answer this quickly, right? Because you can see yourself growing old, getting nearer and nearer to the final point. Then the Buddha asked, and that which is impermanent, is it always blissful? Because it will change, isn't it? Bear that in mind. Even your suffering is not always painful. It will change for the better. Or is it subject to suffering off and on? Then the answer from the monk is, it is not always blissful. Then the Buddha go on. When you are young, during your youth, maybe you enjoy life. However, some may not be so fortunate because karmically, they may be born with defects and have handicaps, and are handicaps. But most of us have fairly good karma, and we are born normal and healthy. Not for long, though. Because sooner or later, old age, sickness, and death will catch up with everyone. These are the reality of life and existence. This body will start to decay and go old, and it will start to fail or fall apart. The organ too will start to fail, and many things will start to go wrong due to wear and tear and disease. The Buddha continued, that which is impermanent, subject to suffering and change, is it right to consider it thus? This is me, this is I, and this can be mine. What do you think? You still so foolish or not? You know it's subject to change, impermanent, condition arising, then lead to suffering. Is it right to consider it thus? It is me. This is me, this is I, and this can be mine. What do you think? Ultimately, when your breath stops, what happens? You cannot own nor have anything, because even this very body you cannot take along with you. That's why in the Dhammapada, the Buddha said, my son, my wealth, my property, all this only the fools lament, the foolish one lament. For that very body does not belong to him, wherein son and wherein wealth. You cannot even own your own physical body, yet you want to own another person's body. And you also want to own all those wealth and property. Understand that they are all condition arising entity or phenomena. When the conditions are there temporarily, it is as if you can own them. But when conditions cease to be, they will be gone. Just like during the Iraq and Kuwait war, Iraq invaded Kuwait and kicked out the Kuwaiti government. Overnight, the Kuwaiti government and the Kuwaiti people did not own anything anymore. Overnight, it's all gone. The United Nations, together with the Western power and the United States, then declared war on Iraq. And that was how Kuwait eventually regained what they lost. So when conditions are no more conducive, overnight, everything can be gone. Agree or not? You need to reflect on all this deeply to understand the impermanent nature of all condition arising entity, especially your own five aggregate of form and mind. Similarly, the Buddha continued with the other aggregate. He asked, what do you think, Bhikkhu? Are feeling, perception, sankhara or mental formation and consciousness permanent or impermanent? Then that which is impermanent, subject to suffering and change, is it right to consider it thus? This is me, this is I, and this can be mine. That certainly is not correct, said the Buddha. After that, he instructed the Bhikkhu, therefore, Bhikkhu, listen. This is the ultimate. Whatever that arises, may it be form, physical form or external form, feeling, perception, mental formation or sankhara and consciousness, whether in the past, present or future, one's own or external, gross or subtle, lofty or low, far or near, one should understand according to reality. When you can have this, you will awaken, you can become Arahan. According to reality and through wisdom, that all this five aggregate of form and mind, this does not belong to me. This am I not. This is not me, not myself. When understanding it thus, the Buddha said, the wise noble disciple become varies of form, feeling, perception, mental formation, and consciousness. Wary of the five aggregate of form and mind, they will feel revulsion, and then on account of this revulsion, they attain liberation. And the spiritually liberated disciple knows that he or she is liberated. That birth has been exhausted, the holy life lived to perfection, duty performed, and that there shall be no more birth or returning to this conditioned world. Thus spoke the Blessed One. The five bhikkhu expressed appreciation towards the speech of the Blessed One. While these were delivered, the mind of the five ascetic or bhikkhus attained perfect spiritual liberation from all grasping and attachment to the five aggregates of form and mind. And at that time, there were six perfect arahants in the world. Sounds so easy. So anybody got transformed. Actually, it's not that difficult. Now I will go into the talk proper. The Anisutta has already given you an indication of what this teaching is all about. Before I go into the next section, seeing form, the unreality of form, and seeing beyond form. Do you have any question? So far, Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. Does it sound profound and meaningful to you or not. Thus, I do not be deluded by this form and mind, this so-called human being. You always think it's you. It is never you. Because the Buddha make it very clearly. If it's you, then you can say, let it be past and not otherwise. But this body never listen to you, understand? Got no time for you. That's why in Cantonese, choi le tong ong. You can go and complain and say all those things like when you meditate. Like they say in Cantonese, chung yi hiao, make you painful, make you restless. So all this, they arise dependent on what? Condition. When you have sakayadity, self-delusion, all this will arise. When you have the mental hindrance, born of the ego roots, born of self-delusion, you will become heedless, understand? You cannot blame anybody. That's why the Buddha said, we are all born of our karma. Hey to our karma, condition is supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of karma. So when you understand all this, then you cannot blame anybody. When he say you are born of your karma, it means this form and mind, understand? It's not your Buddha nature. That's why the two aspects of Dhamma, the conditioned Dhamma and the unconditioned Dhamma, you must understand them clearly. So that you understand what the Buddha meant when he say you are born of your karma head. He is referring to this form and mind, not the real you. Because there is no permanent unchanging entity there. That one is not you. That's why he said this one is impermanent. Go the way of nature. It is impermanent. That's why it will lead to suffering. It is not you. You cannot decide what you want to do with it. Yeah. If it's you, then you can say, don't grow old, don't get sick, and don't die. But because it is anatta, non-self, it don't belong to you. It goes the way of nature. So if you cannot understand the nature's law that governs life and existence, you will not be able to have the wisdom to come to terms with all this reality. Then you will always get yourself entangled. You are always wanting your way. That's why suffering will arise. Nature has its own way. Like the Buddha said, whatever that arises, there are causes and conditions behind. All these are nature's law. If you cannot come to terms with the reality, what is, like Krishnamurti say, then you are being deluded. Then you wanting your way, which is not nature's way. That's why suffering arises. When you cannot get what you want, you become afflicted, you become miserable. Oh, we still got 70 minutes. Maybe I read on. The Heart Sutta says form does not differ from emptiness. And emptiness does not differ from form, for form itself is emptiness, and emptiness itself is form. So how do we reconcile with this statement of truth? Before there is this form, what do you have? You have empty space there. Later on, the planet evolves, then there is gravity. And through evaporation and gravity, air is trapped and hence the atmosphere is created. When the human mind and living being evolve over the eons, all this formation from the Big Bang become elements and started to accumulate to form planets. Then you have the atmosphere. Beyond the atmosphere is space. If you go into actual space, you will know it is empty without air. That is why you cannot use the normal flight technology. As that technology needs oxygen to burn fuel, you need rocket propulsion to have the thrust to push it into space. And you need to have liquid oxygen to create oxygen, because in space there is no oxygen. A lot of understanding is needed. Then let us investigate when you are on planet Earth. Initially, this space is just white. You call this white space. Let us say you introduce a solid box into this space. Then what do you see? This box, you say, is form. But before the form comes in, there is just space or whiteness. Can agree or not? before you put the object in. So Kuan Yin say, form does not differ from emptiness, from the void, understand or not? Because before the form went in, is the void. So actually the void and the form, they occupy the same place. So that's why Kuan Yin say, form does not differ from emptiness, which is the space. Now can you follow? Emptiness, the empty space, does not differ from the form, for they both occupy the same space. Can you see? Now you say, yeah. And you all can agree. Before that, cannot be la. How can form be empty and emptiness be form? You argue a lot. Because you never reflect, contemplate, and meditate. When you meditate, then you realize, before anything arise, there was nothing. Correct enough. Then how does thing come about? That's why nature is very, very wise. From nothing, everything arise. Then to nothing, everything return. That's why zero-sum theory. So all this, you can never understand until you can see the condition arising. Like our assembly here every Thursday. If there is no condition, do you think this session can go on, can arise? Cannot, is it? The beginning condition, if Eng Bi and Mi Feng didn't start to invite me to come here, and if Sui An don't agree, 6-7 years ago, all this cannot happen because of condition. Then it arises. Then when it arises, you take for granted. Wow, we are so lucky, we are so blessed, we are whatever. But if any of this condition is not there, all this ceases to be. If Yun Chan had not come, we go further back and get me to come out to share 11 years ago. All your discondition later cannot arise. Understand? So everything is condition arising, because condition then arise, it can lead to condition now. That's why when you don't understand, you must have an open mind. Don't try to be too smart. Smart is not wisdom. Smart is intellect. So intellect is knowledge, cleverness. They say clever boy, then they say smart fellow. But the wise one is different. The wise one is not clever or smart. The wise one is very wise. So this one is very important. So coming back to the physical body, when I look at you, if I look at only your external form, then you are different from the others. I'm also different. But do you know that we occupy the same space, which is emptiness within? But you cannot see because you are distracted by the external form. You do not meditate. Moreover, when we discuss spiritual understanding, we are not interested in that empty space. And now you understand. We are more interested in the whole of that being. So if you look at this human being, like this analogy, what do I see? If I deludedly identify with this form, then it is mundane seeing or delusional seeing. This is form and this is mind. Because the human being is just these two components. The mind or consciousness trapped inside this form or the physical body. If you deludedly cling on to this human form, then it is as though we are all different. That is why the world has a lot of problems, because we cling on to this form Dhamma. The form Dhamma is not the true Dhamma. Form Dhamma is only one of the worldly condition arising Dhamma. It is not ultimate truth. It is relative truth or partial truth. So if I don't look at the form, what do I see? Let's say I can see beyond your physical form. Because as I meditate, I will develop the ability to be heedful, to be silent. Then I start to understand that a human being is not just the external form. It is precisely what the Buddha has explained. External form is made up of element only, the four elements with no knowing. So it cannot be you. Hence, form is definitely not you. For according to Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, form goes the way of nature. It brings about suffering. And you have no control over it. Therefore, if this is not me, then why do I deludedly attach, cling, and give meaning to it? So if I can see beyond form with my direct seeing, what do I see? No more form. What does that mean? No more problem, isn't it? If I don't identify with the physical body or physical form, it means I don't have problem relating to gender anymore, male and female. Hence, no more male and female form delusion to create gender-related problem. Similarly, no more Chinese, Indian, Malay, etc. Hence, no more race issue or conflict. Also, no more problem related to tall, short, young, old, beautiful, and ugly. No more. Many problems get resolved if I can see beyond form. And that is the true Dhamma. Do not be gullible anymore. And do not use your mundane mind to see. Otherwise, you will be deceived. That's why you have to learn how to see form, the unreality of form. Then only you can see beyond form. Because form is condition arising, causal phenomena, not real, not you. So don't identify with form. Otherwise, form will deceive you, delude you, condition you to grasp and cling. Then through circularity, self-delusion, you believe this is real, this is what you are. Then we go to the three stages or level of seeing. That's why in the Mahayana teaching, there are three stages of seeing. Oh, sorry. I missed our one page. Okay. If you deludedly cling on to this human form, then it is as though we are all different. Oh no, I have finished all this. Correct, I have finished all this. That's why in the Mahayana teaching, there are three stages of seeing. The first seeing is mundane seeing. What is mundane seeing? Kan san, si san. You heard of this famous saying. See mountain. Mountain is mountain. Yeah, this is mundane seeing. Mundane people say, mountain. So mountain. So kan san, si san. Because to mundane people, when they see mountain, it means mountain. Why do you want to argue with them? Human beings means human being. And similarly, Brother Sui An or Brother Te, etc. How do you identify them? You identify them through their external form, isn't it? With the mundane mind, which is condition arising by perceiving it. That's why in the first level of seeing, which is mundane seeing, you tend to argue. We are right and wrong. We are gender and race discrimination. Especially those who are born as male, they tend to cite their own gender. We are saying male is a better gender because they are the head of the household. And most men, they are more authoritative and superior. All this comes from where? Or from what? Mundane seeing. We are using the thought leading to attachment and delusion. And these are relative truth, not ultimate truth, because this five aggregate of form and mind is not you. Hence, not a reality. It is made up of the four elements with no knowing. So how can it be you? If you can see beyond form, you will go direct to the mind. And when I can see that conscious mind inside, then you are not so different anymore, isn't it? But are we the same? At the mind level, are you the same? You are still different, isn't it? Consciousness has its content. Do you remember? Citta is consciousness and its content. And what is the content of consciousness? Yes, your cetasika, the 52 mental factors, your views and your opinion. And they include all of your mental states, emotions, your views, your opinion, your conditioning, etc. That's why this one is still different. This one is the mundane mind, conditionalizing mind, consciousness with its content. So when it is consciousness, you will have your views, your opinion, and your conditioning. And because of that, we are still different. Then you may say, I'm a Christian, I'm a Buddhist. then the religious label become very important. Or I'm a Chinese, and I traditionally believe in this. Or I am Guailou, a Westerner, and I cannot accept traditional Chinese culture and all those things. So you still argue, according to Buddha, to understand this form and mind, you must have the wisdom developed via the direct seeing. Then you can have similar realization like Kuan Yin Bodhisattva when he illuminated on these five skandhas. He realized that they are all empty because they are all conditioned arising entity or states within the mundane conditioned world. And they all have the universal characteristics of impermanent suffering leading to the non-self or empty nature. Ultimately, it's all empty, only mighty nature rolling by, following nature's law. No real meaning. That is why anatta lakkhana is very penetrative, because it can let you realize that this five aggregate of form and mind, they are all non-self, empty, impermanent, leading to suffering. When you understand this, you will be able to see beyond the conscious mundane mind, which is just the condition arising mind, consciousness, and its content. Then what do you see? What is behind these five aggregates of form and mind? You will see the unseen. What is the unseen? You will surely ask me, Brother Theo, unseen means cannot be seen in there. Huh? So what do you see? You see nothing. You see emptiness. But those who awaken, they realize what that thing is without word. Understand? This one you cannot use your conscious eye to see. This one is your true mind, your true nature. And this one cannot come out and live life. This one cannot think. It has got no thought. They call it by different names. Some call it the true mind or the true nature or your original nature. When you can see via your direct seeing or via your silent mind in meditation, you can then connect to it. You will come to realize that this is the unconditioned with no thought, no aggregate, no form, no mind. It is just awareness, pure awareness before the knowing. Then what happened? This is meditation. That's why I told you not to try to know in meditation. Just train your mind to be silent. This is the meditative mind. This one got no word, no concept, no idea, no views, no opinion, and this one cannot come out and live. To live life, you need the five aggregate of form and mind, which is the human being, the vehicle that you need to come. These two, the form and mind, when combined, becomes the five aggregate. And one aspect of it is the human being. This is the vehicle and the tools that enable you to come to this world. Living being come to this world through what? Through this karmically conditioned form and mind, which is the vehicle and the tool for you to come to this world, to live life, to experience all of the beauties and wonders of life. But without this true mind connected via the direct seeing, to develop the wisdom, to see things as they are, to understand the unreality of this form and mind, to break the self-delusion, which is sakayadity, and to see or insight into the universal characteristics of impermanence, suffering state, and non-self, or empty nature, you can never liberate your mind. That's why without the direct seeing via the silent mind in meditation, you cannot develop the wisdom. That is the reason why thought-based meditation is doomed to fail, as I had often told you all. Now you understand. Most of you are trapped in form and mind, trying to liberate from form and mind. Can you all understand? Thought is trying to escape from thought. Is it possible? You can ask yourself. You are playing a game of delusion, and you want to come out from delusion. Who is trying to come out? The thought, and the thought wants to be enlightened. So the one that wants to come out is the thought, and the thought wants to be enlightened. But what is enlightenment? Beyond thought, beyond mind. Hence, thought must die. Understand or not? But thought has sakayaditi, craving, refuse to die. Understand or not? That's why it's actively deluding you, telling you a lot of things. But thought does not want to die, because if thought die, sakayaditi, you think is you die. Understand or not? That's why you don't want to die, understand? You fear of death. That's why you are so gullible, and yet you think you are doing vipassana. And some are very proud of saying it. Also, because you think thought is you, you think feeling is you. You think there is a person who think, perceive, become conscious, and live life. This is the biggest delusion, the Buddha said. This is the real meaning and real understanding of Heart Sutta. Form does not differ from emptiness. Emptiness does not differ from form. For form itself is emptiness, and emptiness itself is form. It is all condition arising. When condition cease to be, it is never there. When you all remember this table analogy which I had described before during my last talk, externally, like the bullock cart analogy, it is already condition arising, because when the parts come together and it performs a function, you give it a name, then the bullock cart arises already. You then say real. And then what did the Buddha tell the monks? Take it apart, the wheel, the axle, and all the other parts. Then he asked the monk again, now where is the bullock cart? Yeah? The monk say, no more. So how real is the bullock cart? When the condition are there, when all the parts come together, it arises. Krena. That's why it's impermanent. It's not a permanent unchanging entity. It's condition, right? When condition cease to be, that one cease to be. Your form and mind also same. But you don't meditate. That's why you cannot see. You cannot realize that. This is like a very nice type of game, isn't it? Suddenly block card arises, then suddenly block card no more. Then when you put everything back, the block card arises again. Then the Buddha asks, what do you understand from this analogy? When conditions are there, when it can perform a function, you give it a name and a concept, and then it arises. And then it arises already and become like real. That's why according to the Buddha, everything is mind-made. The mind is a forerunner of all things. Mind is shift. Mind-made are they. When mind arises to perceive, then it becomes like real, exists already. And who says it's real? Yeah? Who says it's real? It's your thought. It is the thought with its content. So to understand the thought with its content, you have to have the mindfulness and the silent mind to see clearly that these are all conditions arising, existing from moment to moment, depending on its supporting condition. When you penetrate this, you will see things very differently. Like the Buddha said, externally, it is already condition arising, just like that bullock cart, or this table, or this whiteboard, or your physical body, and the form of mind, etc. They are all condition arising, not so real. Then how do you know it is a bullock cart? How do you know? Who know? Through memory, through your perception. Again, it's the thought. With the image up there, understand not? Then how do you know it's a block card? Through what? Through your mental perception, mental aggregates of sanya. And you perceive it via a mental image up here, means your brain there. And then you recall through memory, hence the labeling and the words and the concept created by thought. Externally, the form is already conditioned arising, not so real. Then how do you know? How do you come to know about it? You know about it through a perception via an image up here, laterally inverted, but your brain knows how to make it upright. Then what are you doing? That image, which is the perception, is even more unreal, isn't it? Correct? Then why are you so deluded? That's why it is just mind-made, consciousness only. Then why do you cling on to it, grasp onto it, and hold on to it, and believing that it's so real, and try to own it, try to possess it, and want to pay so much money for it? That is delusion, isn't it? Everything is condition arising, causal phenomena, not what you think. That's why real and unreal depend on your understanding. When you don't understand, everything is like very real. But when you understand nothing is real, everything is empty within the moment. The whole universe is a world of what? Consciousness, nothing else. How real can consciousness be? Moment to moment of mind state. How real can that be? All of your knowing come from there. That's why when you are deluded, you cannot see. Everything to you is very real. So meaningful, so solid. Even your own form and mind, so real. Then can you recall what did the Buddha said about consciousness and its analogy? He said consciousness is like a magician and an illusionist. What is a magician? What is an illusionist? An illusionist is someone who creates illusion for you to see. Or a perception is like a mirage. The five aggregates with its five analogy. Do go back and reflect on it. Form is like form. Looks so solid and real. But behind it, it is empty. Because form of form disperse very fast, apparently. It appears very solid, but when condition disperse, it's gone. Just like the block cut analogy, if it is on fire, then it burns and returns to nature, following nature's law. It goes the way of nature. Or finally, when it wears out, after a long time of usage, it will crumble. Just like what the Buddha told Ananda before his parinibbana. Ananda cried, and then somebody reminded Ananda that he must beg the Buddha to extend his life because the Buddha has psychic ability. He can do it if he wants to. When the Buddha was approached by Ananda, do you know what the Buddha told Ananda? He said to Ananda, don't be foolish. This body of mine is like a worn-out blockade waiting to collapse and crumple, and you still want me to continue with it. Understand? No meaning. So out of love and compassion, I have already worked and do what I have to do, and use this form to its very limit, and still you want me to go on with it for another 5 or 10 years. Or maybe another 40 years, because they must have thought that everybody can live until 120 years old, like most of them at that time. So out of love and compassion for the world, the Buddha has sacrificed his physical body, and that was the reason why he passed away at the age of 80, because he does not have enough rest. And to him, 45 years of Dhamma sharing is enough. If you still cannot understand him, then even if he stay on for another 10, 20, 30 or 40 years or so, it's going to be of not much use. If he really wants to learn the Dhamma, to me, 5 to 10 years is more than sufficient. Because under the Satipatthana Sutta, the Buddha said the fastest is 1 week, longest is 7 years. You may think you are still young and still have a lot of time. The oldest among you all, how old? 70? If you live to 80, then you think there is still enough time. But then death is a certainty, even though life is uncertain. So one cannot assume. This above Dhamma is very important and is the essence of the Buddha's teaching. Now I will move on to life, which is the most important. Oh, cannot exceed the time by 10 minutes. Sorry, huh? You go back and read yourself. I only reached page 33. How many of you have read this book? Oh, good. Sadhu. If you read and understand, I will rejoice. You will awaken, I tell you. Because this is a very, very powerful sutta on emptiness. Okay? Okay, now we will do the sharing of merits and transfer merits. I have to ask you one question. Does it benefit you to go through all this transcript? Means you all don't even want to read. I think so also. Because my nature told me, he said, after so much of this has been done, if I don't read it out, somehow you all read on your own, you cannot understand it. It's not so clear. Clear not? Even those who have read through, unless those who really cultivate, I think they can follow and they rejoice. But for most of you, if I'm not wrong, you have to give me the feedback. When you all read, How much can you understand? Not much, isn't it? You listen, become clearer. Huh? No, because you don't know my style, understand? Huh? And you seldom listen to the recording. You listen to a recording, you know my style, you will read with understanding. You don't know my style, you read, you don't follow what I say according to what I explain at the actual talk. You sure catch no ball. Because it's not easy. This topic is not easy. So maybe I will see how. Next time we try to spend some time on this translation. And you tell me which book you want to go through. Hasuta, that one, retreat time. Retreat time, go through the whole thing. You go like that, Hasuta will take another 1 year, 3 months. We did 15 months of Hasuta, and you want to go through that one. By the time, I think, 2020, Vision 2020. Okay, we will do the sharing of merits. Sharing of merits with the devas. Akka satta cha bhumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anemo ditwa chirang rakan tu loka sasana. May all beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power, share these merits and may they long protect the dispensation. Itta vata cha amehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya. May all beings share these merits which we have thus acquired. May all devas rejoice and may contribute greatly to their well-being and happiness. Transform merits to departed one. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo. Let these merits accrue to our departed relatives and all those who can receive them. And may they all to be well and happy always. Okay, invoke the blessing for our nation. Devo asatakalena sasa sampati hetu cha fito bhavatu loko cha raja bhavatu dhammiko. May the rain fall in due season. May there be a rich harvest, rich and good harvest throughout. May the world be peaceful and prosperous always. May the government of the day, the king and the rulers, be righteous. Now you make your aspiration. Imina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patiya. By the grace of this marriage that we have thus acquired, may we never follow the foolish and the heedless, but only the wise and the enlightened one, until Nibbana is realized. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha. Then we end.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. today is Silun, Silun Fasting.
Salute to Brother Silun. For touching my brother and sister to come here to share the Buddha Dhamma with us.
And a big salute to all those that contributed to the Kamita Fund and tonight's puja offering.
Next week's class is